Hi, Emery friends. I am so happy to be back with you today again with my wonderful friend, Melissa Stengel, who is one of the founders and COO of Soltara Healing Center, which is an ayahuasca center. She and I met through mutual friends. And from the moment that I met you, Melissa, it was like instant, just a hell yeah, like incredible human, wonderful. And I couldn't be happier to connect with you in this on this platform so that more people can experience you as an individual and incredible human and the work that you're doing in the world. And the reason I think it's so important for the Emery audience being people that are very, we'll say, exploring relationships in all of their different facets, I found in my work that sometimes I butt up against places of resistance or place like wounds within people that are really hard to heal with the mind. And ayahuasca has been something that I have leaned on and referred people to when they get to that moment of kind of their inability to logic or reason through healing. And I think it's just a perfect, it's perfect timing for everything happening in the world, exploring relationships, exploring plant medicine. And so I'm excited to see where our conversation goes today. That being said, how about you give an idea to the people, like, how did you get into, you know, founding a center in Costa Rica for ayahuasca?
Yeah, thank you so much, Megan, for having me on. And just to say in equal measure, it was so good to meet you. I feel like when we first connected, it was instant, like, okay, we're doing this work, we're on this path together. So yeah, just great to meet community in that way. And I honestly sometimes joke that I was recruited by the plants because my life was not going in this direction at all. And I really come from a very scientific, I have a master's in engineering from the University of Pennsylvania, and I was doing cancer research for a long time. I was really fascinated by healing in the sort of Western realm. That was what mm-hmm. I knew at the time. And that was my orientation to life. And it was very logical. And so much of that was really about, okay, what individual biological levers can you pull in the body in order to heal this mysterious illness that is cancer? And, you know, I think that there's absolutely a place for that. And that is absolutely a huge component of healing. And I don't think that that's all of it. And really, I got a little bit frustrated with feeling just disconnected in my own life. I felt that there was a very mechanical and objective approach to things that to me didn't fully encompass the spectrum of life and also the spectrum of healing. And so, you know, I also dove into corporate America for a while and sort of took that path that everybody says that you should take when you go to a college and have a lot of student debt and, you know, follow that path. I think a lot of my peers kind of followed the same path as well. And for me personally, after a few years, I started to feel that there was something missing. And I think that that's something that resonates with a lot of people nowadays, at least in my conversations in this day and age. And so I hadn't really delved into psychedelics too much. I was also sort of a product of the Just Say No drug war and all of that propaganda for a long time. Mm-hmm. So it took me a minute to really open up to the possibility. And it was very slow at first. It was a few psilocybin ceremonies with friends. And really, before I really started delving into the corporate world very heavily, I had a feeling that I wasn't really going to feel fulfilled by it. I just really needed the money. And so I was looking for something to orient me to this next chapter and also have a little bit of a more worldly experience. I had only left the country a couple of times. So I happened to be on Reddit one day. This was back in 2013 when plant medicines and ayahuasca in particular, it was sort of just starting to be known in the Western world and mainstream conversation. So I just happened to be on a Reddit forum that I came across a post from Dan, who is now my business partner, saying that he takes people into the Peruvian Amazon to do ayahuasca ceremonies with Shipibo healers. And ask me anything. And I was like, I have a lot of questions.
Nice.
So I started asking questions and he answered them. You know, I found out that the Shipibo people are an indigenous people from the Ucayali region in Peru, and they have a really longstanding, time-honored tradition working with ayahuasca. It's foundational to their healthcare system, to their culture and cosmology. It's a plant teacher for them. It's the spirit. And this was really intriguing for me because it was completely outside of the realm of, you know, anything I had experienced or how I experienced my own relationship to the world, really, mm-hmm. until that point. And so the timing was very synchronistic. It worked out really well. I got a good feeling about it. And my partner at the time thought I was a little bit crazy for going to do drugs in the jungle with some guy I met on Reddit, right? Like, this was the narrative. And I was like, I don't know. I have a good feeling about this. Mm-hmm. He was like, oh, cool. You have a good feeling. Like, great. I'm never going to see you again. Right. And that was actually a really pivotal moment in my own journey because, you know, hindsight's 2020, and looking back, I really realized that that was the first time that I followed the thread of my own intuition, mm-hmm. versus doing what I thought I should do and sort of following this path that was laid out before me that I had, you know, worked hard to get to. But so this was a complete left turn. And, you know, I said to him that I really have a good feeling about this. I'm going to go do it. If you want to come with me, let's do it together. And so he did. And it really, for me, planted a seed. It wasn't this like completely transformative, mind-blowing experience. But for me, actually, the very first ceremony I ever had was all about my relationships. I went through every single person in my life that was close to me, and I just felt into the love that I had with them and the relationship that I had and the gratitude for their presence in my life. And you know, I didn't really know what to expect, but what I really got from that very first ceremony was that it's all about the relationships. It's all about, you know, the people and the community and the more than people, right? The beings in my life that I have yeah. relationships with. And so we had some Peruvian adventures as well. Our bus got stuck in the mud right before the first ceremony, and we almost weren't going to make it. And we had to, we actually ended up hiring a 12-year-old with a boat to take us to the center. And we arrived 2 hours beforehand.
Oh my gosh.
And it was one of those like, oh, I guess we're doing this now, just right into the fire. And so after that trip, I went back to my corporate job, and I was like, I have to, you know, go take this job. But hey, Daniel, you know, I really love what you're doing here. I would love to keep in touch, but I have to go take this job. And so a couple years later, he had built a center down in the Amazon, and he had started to work with these Shipibo communities. They lent him land, and in exchange he worked with them to hire some of the people and offer to teach some classes, and we also gave a space for them to sell their crafts and things like that. So it was forming this relationship with this local community that mm-hmm. allowed him to build the center. And so then in 2015, I was 2 years into this very corporate job. I was really on the edge of depression. It was a pretty toxic environment, and I was asking for a change. I was like praying. I was like, I need to get out of here. And I got this email from him that said that they were looking for an operations manager down at the center. And it was like the fastest cover letter I've ever written in my life. and I was like, please, like, he really took a chance on me too, 'cause I had only had two ceremonies at that point with him, at all. And so, yeah, he said, you know, do you understand that this means like moving to the Amazon and learning Spanish and, you know, doing this work? And I was like, yes, give me 2 months to learn Spanish and I will be there. And so,
wow.
You know, I really entered into this space from not as much a facilitator or, you know, being in the ceremonies, helping the mm-hmm. people. I was more the background, like making sure people got there. I was answering the emails and helping people get to the center and helping manage operations on site, which for me was like how I could use my sort of like technical type A background to help in this ecosystem. And it was extremely potent. I'm so happy and grateful that I got to enter into this world being in the Amazon, working with these amazing Shipibo healers, understanding what relationship to plants really means and plant spirits. And it completely opened up my world and my relationship to myself. And I was like, we have so much healing to do in this world with not just ourselves, but the earth as well. And that's really been my motivator for staying in this world. And so we worked there for 2 years and then really felt that the evolution of this work was also to have a really strong focus on integration, which is, you know, how do you take these lessons when you have these types of experiences and enact them into your life? And so we had the opportunity to move to Costa Rica, which is Daniel had experience with ecotourism here, really loved the country. And for us, this really felt like a bridge between the global north and global south. And so a little bit more accessible for people who maybe didn't have the ability to go all the way into the Amazon. But we really wanted to maintain the sanctity of the container of the ceremony and the Shipibo healers that are just masters of their craft. So as much as we, you know, can, we really keep the ceremony under the umbrella of, you know, how they like to do it. And, you know, we don't call ourselves traditional because there's yoga, there's integration support, there's, you know, Western trauma-informed facilitation surrounding the programming, but everything is in support of the way that they work and the medicine that they carry. So that's really been the evolution of Soltara. We opened in 2018 and we just only work with Shipibo healers. We only work with ayahuasca. Our programming is all in support of that. And we have a very strong focus on preparation and integration. So trying to be this bridge for people who often do come from a Western world, the world that I came from, and are like, oh, this is a whole new way of relating.
Exactly. Oh my gosh. I have so many questions. I will say first though, my internet, because we're both in Costa Rica, so it's cut out in slices here. So I think I got most of that, but forgive me if I ask something that you have already talked about. I love that you have a different background than a lot of people get into it. You know, you have your operations backgrounds. And I love that from the time that I met you, I experience you like a bridge, you know, because we need logistics, we need the physical space, we need the communication, we need all of that to bring this wisdom and this plant medicine to more people. And I'm curious, you mentioned that you started to reorient yourself in the way that you related to things through what you saw the Shipibo people, you know, how they relate to the plant medicine and probably to the world around them. Can you briefly describe what is that? Is there a way that they relate to the medicine, to the world that you've learned?
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm still, you know, this is a constant learning process for me as well, because it is very different than how at least I have been taught in the culture that I come from. And, you know, I'm sure you as well. It's a very mechanical, objective, reductionist approach in the Western world, right? It's like there's this feeling of sort of separation. There's also this very centering or hierarchical structure that like humans are, you know, above nature, separate from nature, that, you know, we control nature. And, you know, this is very damaging to us, because we are nature and we are connected within this very complex intelligent system that is the web of life. And and there's also, you know, beyond the veil as well. I think there's you know, at least the religion that I grew up in, which was Catholic, you know, God was very separate from you, and God was always watching you, and God would punish you and judge you. And, you know, there was again this, and you had to have priests that were, you know, separate people that were your bridge to this connection to the divine. And that's just really not how the Shipibo and many other indigenous traditions view this. This is, for them, this is a very animistic perspective. And really the simplified version of what that means is that everything is alive. Everything is constantly interconnected and interacting. And what that means is that healing is relational. And so this goes very deep within this tradition, because for example, when someone is sick in the Shipibo culture, oftentimes the cause of that sickness is a result of being out of balance with a relationship, with something or someone. And so, for example, someone might be sick because they hunted in the wrong place, or they fished in the wrong river, or they weren't taking care of their land. So there was like an out of balance with a relationship to the land or nature around them. Another example, you know, it could be that there's a fight within the community, or, you know, they got into an argument with someone else in the community. So they're sick because of the energetics of that fight. Wow. And so, you know, there isn't this feeling of like, something's wrong with you, you have depression, you know, this is up to you to fix entirely. It's like, what has been out of balance in your relationship to the world around you and the people and spirits and beings around you? And, you know, I think that there's just so much wisdom in that, in really mm-hmm. understanding that, you know, we are not isolated from anything. And we're starting, I think, to like understand this concept in Western psychology a little bit better. Like, yes, healing happens in relationship, you know, but I think they really take it into this much broader and richer understanding that it's the entire world, you know, and it's the more than human world, and it's the more than physical world as well. Mm-hmm. And so for me, that translates so well with actually starting to, you know, create like an offering practice to the land that I'm on, and to, you know, learn and understand my own connection to the divine and how to interact and pray to that and be with that. Just to really not feel so isolated in this journey. And I think a lot of times healing can also be very individualistic focused in sort of like modern healing culture. Mm-hmm. And it's so communal in these spaces and in Shipibo culture and other indigenous wisdom. Like when you're sick, it's like the community is there. And mm-hmm. when you go through a transformative experience, the community is also there with you, holding the space or offering the prayers or, you know, energetically supporting you in some way.
I love so much of this. I feel like we not only need the gift that ayahuasca itself can offer, but the culture that it is brought to us through. When you said healing is relational, I got goosebumps. I'm like, it so is. And I'm having moments of the way that I felt growing up, which was so much more connected than what I was told around me. So I feel like for me, it's been kind of the background story that I'm like, why do I feel so different? Why does everybody feel like we're so disconnected? I don't feel that. That doesn't feel true to me. No, I'm realizing that I've totally neglected to ask you to describe what is ayahuasca for anyone that is a little unclear or that hasn't stepped into this world before. If you want to just give like the real
absolutely.
Basic.
So ayahuasca is a brew of two plants typically. So sometimes there's other plants that are added to it, but the main plants that go into it are, so ayahuasca is the name of the brew. It's also the name of the vine. And that's actually a Quechua word. So and that's what it's most commonly known as, but, in Shipibo, it's called uni, which is essentially wisdom, or knowledge. And the healers or curanderos are onanya, which is wisdom keepers. And so we refer to it kind of as both, but yeah, it's called uni in Shipibo. And, it's a brew, it's a psychoactive brew, made from the ayahuasca vine, Banisteriopsis caapi, and the chacruno leaf, Psychotria viridis. Sometimes there's other plants, and in different traditions, there's also other plants that are used, but effectively the chacruna is what contains the psychoactive DMT. And normally DMT it's considered one of the more powerful hallucinogenics. Normally it can be smoked, and the experience lasts a very short amount of time, about 10 to 15 minutes. But when it's combined with ayahuasca, the vine, it contains an MAO inhibitor, which is essentially, it allows the DMT to be orally active. So it prevents your body from breaking down the DMT so quickly. And you drink this brew, so it's ingested. And that allows for a longer experience with these two plants combined. So typically ceremonies are, you know, anywhere from 4 to 6 hours in the Shipibo tradition, and it can be longer in other traditions. The Colombian tradition has all night is typically their ceremonies, but it's a very sacred medicine for a lot. It's the foundation of the healthcare systems for over 70 different indigenous tribes throughout the Amazon. It grows naturally in the Amazon, both of these plants, and there's different mythos for how these people understood to actually combine these plants in the way that they did. But for them, it's also a plant spirit. And so there's like the spirit of the medicine. It's considered a master plant teacher. And, you know, I think for anyone who's met ayahuasca, this makes a lot of sense because it does feel like you're really connecting with a knowledge that is greater than you, but that also knows you very intimately. And so it has also been used beyond just healing context. So again, going back to this community orientation, it is very much a, like, it can be done to build stronger community within the villages that this is present in. It can also help with finding objects. It can help with magic. It can help with healing relationships between people, not just like individual sickness. It can help with hunting and, you know, understanding the land better, and again, like where to fish and where to hunt. And so it's got many different uses. I think as it's coming more into the sort of like Western culture, it's been mainly used as healing and healing context. Mm-hmm. And that's the approach that we take at Soltara. But just to say that it is a very deeply rooted plant spirit and foundational. It's like a keystone species for these indigenous peoples.
Wow, amazing. I'm wondering, what are your thoughts on, you mentioned just now that it's used primarily for healing. How do you think people's use and maybe the growing interest of experiencing ayahuasca is supporting people individually, personally, and collectively? Do you have a story, thoughts? I mean, I'm sure you have like a whole framework of the work that you do.
Yeah, it's such a rich question. And I think that there's, you know, I just got back from the Psychedelic Science Conference in June, and you know, there was a lot of talk about different psychedelics and different medicines and the ways that these medicines can be supportive for healing both individually and collectively. And I feel like I've seen a pretty large spectrum of how this can work. One thing I will say about ayahuasca, just to sort of preface this, is because it is done in a very ceremonial context. So it's, again, this, like I mentioned, the ceremonies can be 4 to 6 hours, but there are different rituals. So within the Shipibo tradition, it's done at night. It's done in the dark. It's done in a, with tools that are very limited. Like there aren't, in the Shipibo tradition, there aren't instruments or feathers or altars or anything like that. The main components of the ceremony are the healing songs that the healers sing. They're called Icaros, and tobacco and agua de Florida, which is like a flower water that's used to help cleanse the space. And I say this because this is the one psychedelic medicine, plant medicine, that seems to escape this extremely extractivist approach that people often take in the medical model of like, what is the exact molecule? How can we isolate it? And how can we, you know, ensure that the effects are happening? And to be clear, I'm not saying it's totally free from potential for extractivism and colonialist practices. However, the fact that it is done in a ceremonial context and with the, what the Shipibo believe is that it's actually, the ayahuasca isn't even the main conduit of the healing work done. For them, it's the songs, and the songs that they sing are them channeling the different plant spirit doctors that they have worked with and studied in order to become healers through this process called dieting, which is taking a plant in isolation and really cleansing your own body and vessel enough to be able to connect to the subtle energetics of the plant spirits. And then when you're in a ceremony, the ayahuasca is allowing you to connect to the spirit world, but the songs are what's coming through from the different plant spirit doctors and sort of correcting the energetic knots in a patient's body. And so it's this very like holistic framework You have to have the ceremony, you have to have the songs, you have to have, you know, the tobacco and these other tools, and the ritual around it in order for the healing to really take place. And so even in these sort of like neo-shamanic contexts, it is still intrinsically tied and connected to the ceremony and like this holistic perspective. And there's preparation beforehand and there's dieting and there's, you know, aftercare and all of these things. And so for me, I think that that creates a real potential for healing in this understanding of, you know, it's not just like the DMT in the plant that's causing the healing, right? It's this like very rich system that's more holistic. And what I see the potential for that is really helping to reorient our framework of what we think healing actually is, you know, and it's not just, and what's really happening is that you're building this relationship with this living spirit. And from that relationship, like that's how the healing can take place. And also with the healer and also with the community that you're in ceremony with. And so, you know, for me, that's like so healing individually, but it's also just like, wow, like this is so not what I thought healing was about, right? It's not tinkering biological levers in the same way. And it's doing a little bit of that too. Like the science of ayahuasca is very fascinating, and it really does create new neural connections and help with neurogenesis. And it's also such a somatic experience. And so, you know, people can really get into their own nervous systems and discharge the trauma that lives in people's bodies. And so, you know, it's working on a physical level, on a mental level. You know, sometimes people have, you're really just able to connect different parts of your brain and actually reorient yourself to old memories and like physically rewire your connections for how you perceive these memories. And so you're getting rid of the trauma in your body, you're reorienting in your mind, you're participating in a spiritual experience and interacting with a plant spirit, and the, all of the energetics that encompass that, you know, and you're working through your emotions and you're purging from your nervous system in different ways. So for me, I think that this is like super powerful for individuals. And then the way that it happens, I think is so powerful for the collective, because it really helps us to remember that healing is communal, and it can help us to reconnect with the earth and with nature. And like, how much do we really need that in the collective right now? So yeah, that's a bit of a winding answer, but I hope that answers it. I can't hear you. Oh, no.
Okay. Sorry. Oh, I lost you there for a second.
No,
I'm back. We're back. I heard you say at the end there, the last part I heard you say was that it helps us connect to, you know, back to nature itself. And I really love the collective experience. In fact, I'm sitting here listening to you talk about the experience that you and the rest of the team and the staff at Solterra, along with Shipibo people, have been able to create. And it is, so it seems very meaningful, purposeful, done with a lot of respect to the culture. And I'm thinking about my first ayahuasca experience, my first and only to this point, which was not that. It was in Brazil. It was like a shotgun experience. It was not like, I was missing, I think, a lot of that, even the understanding of what it was. I kind of wish I could hit the redo button on it, but I think that that's what allows me to really see what you and the people that you work with have put together, and that it is this safe container, and that you do work with not only the Shipibo people, but also Western psychologists, people that help facilitate and integrate the experiences afterwards, because I can imagine that is, it can be very disorienting to have an experience and then not understand how to integrate it. Can I hear you speak just a little bit about the process? Like, what does it mean to integrate? Or even for people that aren't familiar with a preparation journey and integration framework of, you know, psychedelics. For me, I think integration is a huge, huge part that can get very much overlooked. So any rifting on that is welcome.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I think that this is part of this like weaving of different cultures and trying to understand, you know, where have we felt disconnected and what are the areas of our life that can actually block us from feeling that connection to ourselves, each other, the earth, our communities, right? And so the preparation process is, it's really not so much about depriving yourself of things. It's actually really more about preparing your body to and mind and spirit to really be able to receive the lessons and insights of the medicine. And so, you know, oftentimes in Western culture, we're very, you know, we have a lot of sugar and processed foods and salt and, you know, media that's just completely overstimulating. And so the part of the preparation process is really to start to take away these distractions or these things that can kind of prevent us from really connecting with our own presence and what is within us and what needs to come through. And so the preparation process, there are some dietary restrictions and protocols that we that the healers ask us to follow and that we pass on to the guests of, for example, cutting out excessive salt, cutting out processed foods, cutting out sugar, pork, alcohol and other substances, including other plant medicines and psychedelics, because again, this is just like really opening up the space to fully receive the energetics of ayahuasca. And there's also psychological and, you know, emotional preparation. And so, you know, that can look like different things for different people. And we have some recommendations. So, you know, whether that's coming up with some sort of meditation practice, and it doesn't have to be, you know, like that you're completely still, but just anything that can help quiet your mind, anything that can help, you know, get thoughts out. Journaling is a great one. Also seeing a therapist. We have therapists that we connect people to that have a lot of plant medicine experience. So to really help people bridge that gap and orient towards, you know, what are the intentions for coming, getting really clear on what it is that you want. Because another beautiful thing about this medicine that I think is different from most Western medicine is that, you know, it's a participatory medicine, and it's really like you are going to get out of it what you put into it. It is not this sort of external thing that messes with your brain chemistry and like has this effect like a lot of Western medicine does. It's like, it's very much interacting with who you are. And so getting clear on your intentions and also feeling supported and in the fears that might come up or, you know, anxieties. And so we provide a space for people to do that in both an individual and a group setting, getting connected with community. So, you know, we have a virtual community platform that can help people connect with others on the journey, because I also think that so much of this healing is about the actual aspect of community. So there's the physical, sort of emotional, mental, and spiritual preparation. If you have a spiritual practice, you know, starting to speak to ayahuasca as a spirit and actually start to like talk to it and build a relationship, you know, that can be really supportive for some people. And so, you know, that can take like anywhere from like 2 weeks to like 6 months, you know, people can prepare for as long as they feel called. Most of the dietary restrictions are 2 to 4 weeks beforehand. There's also a pretty stringent medical intake that we take into account. So we have a medical and psychological intake, and a lot of times people do need to stop taking their medications because they can be contraindicated with ayahuasca. And there are certain diagnoses that are also contraindicated. So things like schizophrenia, bipolar, psychosis, and certain types of heart problems and kidney problems and things like that. So for Soltara, we consult with a medical advisor as well as a psychologist during our intake process, and everybody kind of goes through this process. And then if and when you're approved, then, you know, and this is like considered a good fit for you. It's not so much like if you're a good fit for the medicine, but if the medicine is a good fit for you, right? And so once that's established, then we share these practices beforehand. And then similarly afterwards, it's actually not that much different. It's, you know, you really want to kind of reintroduce normal foods, normal like social media intake and just media in general, very slowly. And you really want to like check in with your body afterwards. And there are some sort of like protocols that we have people follow, but we also just really try to empower people in finding what works for them. So we'll offer a lot of tools and resources, whether that be, you know, therapy. We wrote a book as well that we give everyone when they come for a retreat. And it helps kind of take you through the entire process. And it's written in conjunction with clinical psychologists who have plant medicine experience, and like a build your own integration plan. So, you know, there's many ways, but supportive embodiment practices and therapy and individual and group. We have this virtual community that people can stay connected to. And we do 5 to 6 events every month that are across the field of holistic healing. So helping people to find tools that work for them. And then we also really encourage reciprocity. You know, so much of collective healing and individual healing can come from paying that healing forward. And so there's, you know, ways to connect with different people and organizations, helping to save the Amazon and helping to create indigenous reciprocity and sustainable practices. And so, yeah, we offer like a plethora of solutions. We have 3 months of follow-up care that's weekly. And then we have like ongoing for a lifetime access of free integration circles if you've been through Soltara. And then we also recently developed a program that is moving a little bit more from individual to collective healing. It's called Entwined Community Alignment. And it's something that I'm super excited about because oftentimes, you know, we'll have integration workshops during the retreat as well as group chairs and things like that. And we'll talk about, you know, how to kind of navigate your experience going back home and how to maybe discern who to share your sacred moments with and protect your emotional safety. And, you know, how do you navigate going back home when everything is everything is the same and you're changed? We really asked ourselves the question of what would it be like if actually the environment was a little bit different, was more ready to receive you. So we created this program that helps the families and loved ones, partners and kids understand what this work is and help find resonance through change with the people going through a transformative experience. And I think that that's, again, this like trying to move from this individualistic approach to like, how can we spread this healing out and into actually having ripples in the community.
Oh my God. I love that so much, so much. So that just makes so much sense. And I love that you're bringing the collective healing aspect to the families, you know, to understand and imagine being a child of, you know, your parent goes and does this ayahuasca experience and you're a teenager and you want to understand, okay, well, what is this? And how can I understand what they did? And it's actually informing instead of hiding, or, you know, just we shut off so much of what we think is taboo. This allows an actual open conversation around it. I think it's genius. It's beautiful. And I feel like it is what you stand for. And I also want to give you a shout out too for that platform. You didn't mention what it's called. It's called The Maloca, correct? Yeah. Yes. And people, you can find that right now, even before, you know, anyone that's interested can go and learn on that platform. In fact, I highly recommend it because there's so much there that you have. You've got such a good mix of kind of a plant medicine based Shipibo culture. I think you're doing a really brilliant job bridging the indigenous with kind of the Western world. I remember when you and I were talking at one point, you were describing your role and how you view your role in this interconnected web and network of Western world. And it could be colonizer culture along with the indigenous. And you're like trying to walk this tightrope, or maybe you called it flying a kite. I'm not quite sure. You had a good analogy.
Yeah, it was actually a ceremony that happened one night where I'm like on this precipice, just like a very tiny point and like totally surrounded by air and trying to like maintain my own balance, and I'm flying kites, and like each kite is a different thing, like my team, my business partner, our advisors, the movement, the Shipibo culture, like Western culture, and I'm like trying to like balance all of these things. And my approach at first was like, oh no, like we need to stay balanced. Like, you know, Dan, move, like fly to the left, and, you know, like team, get over here. And I'm like trying to like control how these kites are moving, which is like not how you fly a kite at all. And so I was like, it wasn't working. And what I realized was like, okay, the goal here is to stay balanced. So my role in this is to be like, hey, Dan Kite, like, I'm just going to reflect the information of my team over here and just like reflect it to you and like let you make the decision, knowing that our goal is to stay balanced. And this was like pretty foundational for me in my like orientation to like how to balance all of these facets. I'm like, I'm just like the transmitter of information and like the synthesizer. And then also like, hey, the goal is to stay balanced. The goal is to stay afloat. The goal is to keep doing this work in a good way, right? So like, if we're all on the same team, let's like work together to figure it out. Cause there's so there, it's a constant like asking of the sometimes very difficult and uncomfortable questions, because we are doing this cross-cultural work and there's so much deeply rooted trauma coming to the surface as a result of, you know, this integration of things. And so it's really up to us, you know, and we're not perfect and we're constantly growing and we're trying to like do this in a really good way. And there's a lot of facets to this,
yeah,
you know, that need to be addressed and heard and seen. So yeah, thank you. We're trying and
yeah,
constantly
and, I mean,
listening.
And specifically you. I mean, I obviously the whole Soltara team, but I think you and your role as the COO is like, you really are in the nitty gritty of it. And I just, I hats off to you really to manage and to walk that fine line of respect and also realizing, you know, you're bringing this plant medicine to a culture at large. And yeah, there's a lot of variables in that. So many. So I'm so glad you're doing that work. That's definitely not work that I would feel equipped to be doing. But I'm glad there's you and people like you out there that are really walking this fine line with respect and honor and balance and seeing your role. And how important is it that you have an image of who you are in this space? You know, that to me feels like a necessity, because it is kind of uncharted territory. You were saying that when you found ayahuasca, it's not like you were looking for it. And when you go to college, you're not like, oh, cool, I'm going to do the track that is the, you know, be a founder, co-founder of an ayahuasca, you know, retreat center in Costa Rica. There's no college track for that. So you're writing your own script. And so like, when you really think about it that way, that takes a lot of awareness, you know, and a lot of willingness to step into those uncertain spaces. So it's really admirable for sure.
I appreciate that.
I was just gonna
say, I'm like so standing on the shoulders of giants here too. And you know, I think even in the way that we're like, oh yeah, like let's do this program where we're like talking to the families of people going through this. It's like, that's been so present in Indigenous cultures for so long. Like when somebody goes, for example, on a vision quest, you know, it's like one person going through this experience, but the whole family is keeping the fire and sending the prayers and like holding the space for them so that when they return, right, it is this different environment. And so thank you. I do really appreciate this. It's been like such a beautiful journey trying to kind of figure out, you know, how this can be brought into the world. And as one of my directors says, it's like transformation of consciousness or bust, like all hands on deck.
God,
like,
yes.
Let's go, you know.
Yes, there's
so much wisdom already here. So yeah, it's been like a fun impossible puzzle sometimes to figure out. But I'm so grateful. And if I had told my 13-year-old self who was like reading Chronicles of Narnia that like magic is actually real, I'd be
like, oh, I love that so much. Like, just wait. Isn't it so great that we have no idea what's going to happen, but we do have inklings. I think we do have these stories that have always been in us, or these synchronicities happen. And I think it's just a lot about trust and stepping into the unknown. And that's where I actually do see a lot of overlap between the community that's listening to Amory right now, people that are experimenting relationally and opening up their relationships and leaving the script. It is a lot of the same skill set, and not only in your role, like what you're doing day to day, but also the actual ayahuasca experience, because you have to let go of the reality and the paradigms you've known in order to step into that world. To reorient yourself, to be okay with discomfort. You know, there is a purging process. And I think there's a purging process in polyamory or open relating as well. It's just like, blah, all these insecurities come up to the surface. It's like, this is, now you get to be with it. Now you get to work through it. Now you get to uncover it. Not that it all has to be painful, but I think this is the skill set that you and I are both kind of like working in different ways, but supporting people in. And so how do we write our own scripts? How do we build our muscle to deal with discomfort? How do we reorient ourselves in a new world?
Absolutely. And I feel like it is such a theme. And this is why I love the work that you do too, because I think we tend to get so, or at least I'll speak for myself, like I tend to get so caught up in like the structures that are already in place, and that, you know, following the rules of the structures or creating these like labels for how our life should be, or what, you know, this, all these shoulds, right? And like the binary or the, you know, institution of, you know, a monogamous relationship or marriage. It's like, how do we actually like just take a step back and understand where our own beliefs about what we feel is true and right for us is actually like, and there's an ability to like take the step back and see, you know, like, wow, these are actually not structures that I chose actively for myself. Yes. You know, and actually they've created a lot of disempowerment and a lack of agency in my own life. And like, that's how do I like regain that agency? How do we, you know, empower our own healing process and be active participants? How do we like empower our own desires for what love is and relating actually is, and follow those through? And, you know, I think we need some new structures, and we need some, or we need like less structures, and we just, I don't know.
We need to be conscious of the building blocks. That's to me. It's like, we just need to be aware of the building blocks. We can be like, these are the blocks we get to play with. Sweet. These are the variables. How do I want to build my own thing?
What can we build?
That's how I love that. That's how I view it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Oh, yeah. Now, I would love to know how your relationship with ayahuasca has shifted over the years. You know, obviously you were in more of the operational role, so you're not in the one-on-one working with people after their experiences. You know, you're kind of around it. You can say how it's shifted for you personally over the years, or what you've maybe seen or observed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's funny because I feel like it's in these recent years, it's become like, so like the movement and the field of psychedelics and plant medicines has just like completely exploded. Like, I mean, I realize that I'm kind of like, I'm always surrounded by this work. So for me, it just feels like way, way bigger. But I think, you know, we're seeing legalization, we're seeing MDMA almost over the finish line in being an FDA approved medication. You know, we're seeing veterans leading the way and like, hey, we need help. And like, what's existing now is not helping us at all. And, you know, there's legislation being passed in Oregon and Colorado, and California just is about to get it on the bill as well. So, you know, there's just like this resurgence that's happening. You know, the Psychedelic Science Conference had 12,000 people at it. It was the largest plant medicine psychedelic conference in the history of the Western world.
Was it the MAPS conference?
That was the MAPS conference.
Okay, in Colorado. Yeah. Wow, 12,000. Yeah.
It's crazy. And so, you know, for me, like when I started, I was really grateful to start, like I said, like in the Amazon. I got to do some dietas, which is, for me, they were like healing dietas. When you're becoming a healer, it's more like learning diet. You do the healing first, and then it's like learning, almost like an apprenticeship. So for me, it was healing dietas, and I got to build relationships with, different plants, in conjunction with ayahuasca, and, you know, really build some allyship in this world and learn from them. And so in the beginning, I was participating in ceremonies like once or twice a week for almost 2 years. And it was this really deep, deep excavation of just like my own healing journey and the traumas I had been through, and very much about myself, because I needed to like clear out a bunch of stuff before I could be of service. And I think that's, you know, that's the case for a lot of people that come into this work for healing. It's like, you know, how to actually move beyond yourself. First, sometimes you have to actually really help yourself. And so, yeah, that was that, but it was also in conjunction with like learning how to operate in this world. And, you know, over the years, I don't need to work with the medicine as often. Like I after that 2 years, I actually got this message from ayahuasca that was like, listen, like, you have all the answers that you could possibly need right now. Like, you need to go integrate, like you need to go do the work and take some space. I'm not giving you any more answers. Like, stop coming back to me. And I did really like need to do that. I actually like left the Amazon. I worked remotely for about a year in California with my mom. And, that for me was like, oh my gosh, like it was like a reverse culture shock. And I realized like I had no community, and like, I kind of needed a little bit of like isolation for a bit just to like come back to myself. but I was like, I have no tools. You know, when we were at this center, it was like integration wasn't something that we really talked about. It was like, the hard work starts when you get home, just so you know. And we had like a Facebook group and that was it. And so when I went to California, I was like, this is not okay. Like, I don't, our community needs better. Like, we need to do better. And so the integration of that time was Soltara with a focus on integration, because I was like, this is not working. And so ever since then, it's been like a little bit more spacious in my work with ayahuascas, particularly. I just sat a couple of nights ago, but I sit like every like 1 or 2 months now, really just to like check in and clean, mm-hmm. and life keeps happening, and, you know, kind of like talk to the boss and be like, okay, you know, how can I continue to be of better service, basically. And so now it feels like, I mean, of course I still have my own stuff. Life keeps happening. So there's always things to work through and get deeper understandings of. And I think that I've really come to this place where like, it's, I know that this work isn't just about me, and because I'm already in this world, it's like a lot of it is about like, how do I be of better service, or how do I, you know, decide what to work on next, or how do I, you know, support my team better, or, you know, things like that. So yeah, for me, it's been more like this long-term relationship where it's like, I feel like I have a serious ally in this path of like trying to help.
Wow. That's amazing. Can I ask you, what do you feel like are the current challenges, either yours or in this area in general?
Okay. So I guess I'll share a little bit of like what I saw at the MAPS conference, because I think mm-hmm. It was good for me to see like what else is happening, you know, outside of Soltara. And what I saw was that, you know, they had to organize the conference some way. So they did these different tracks, and mm-hmm. it was like, here's the policy track, here's the therapy track, here's the science and research track, here's the business track, here's the like community track, where a lot of and plant medicine track. So that was where a lot of they had indigenous healers and elders speak on those tracks. And what I saw, because I kind of dipped my toe into all these different tracks, and I kind of like, I feel like Soltara has an opportunity to be this, like have a foot in different, because, you know, we are a business and we're plant medicine, and I'm on the advisory board for some political people in Colorado looking to implement this Natural Medicine Health Act. And so it's, you know, there's all these different areas, and we're participating in scientific research. So I wanted to see about that. But like what happened was that most people just kind of stayed within their own track. And that was probably good for like keeping the peace, because I think that there could easily be anarchy with 12,000 people. However, like it becomes these little echo chambers, right? So it's like in the business track, it was like venture capitalists and how, you know, like the projected, you know, medical system and what it's going to be like, and, you know, the billion-dollar industry that's going to be like MDMA therapy in the next, you know, several years, and how to, you know, present your business to venture capitalists to get money. And so it was like just very like, oh, like that is, it's a lot of capitalism right there.
Yeah.
I'm not saying capitalism is bad, but I think predatory capitalism is bad, and I think that could be like a big risk there. And then, you know, in plant medicine, it was like, actually, let's talk about how we're not in right relationship with these things. And when, you know, when, for example, tobacco, like that's a sacred medicine, and we took it and made cigarettes and like didn't do this intentionally at all, and now it's causing cancer and killing people. Coca was another example that they gave, sacred medicine, sacred plant in the Andes, and we took that and we made cocaine, and it's killing people. Opium even was this medicine in Asia, and we created the opioid epidemic. And it's like, we don't have these like proper relationships with mm-hmm. these plants and these spirits and the lands that they're on, and like the living knowledge, like protecting the indigenous lands that they need to, like, in order to maintain this knowledge, which is mostly orally transmitted, they need to be in contact with the land that they are getting this knowledge from. And if we take away their land, then, like, we're losing all of this knowledge and we're causing so much damage. And so, like, I was like, business people need to talk to plant medicine people, and, like, policy people need to talk to indigenous people, and, you know, like, science and research, like, needs to, like, also understand that, like, this isn't just about the molecule, and this is not about, like, using AI to find good psychedelic analogs that are legal. Like, this is, and I'm not saying that there isn't places for these types of conversations, but what I see as problems is that, like, we're not very cohesive in the movement, and we kind of stick within our own echo chambers, and we need more crosstalk, and we need to be, like, really having the harder conversations and not just kind of, like, having blinders on in the areas that we're working.
Oh, that is so well said. I mean, it's like the medicine is community.
Yes.
Yeah. That healing is relational. Like, we could use this as an opportunity to recreate the same pattern if we don't understand the way that we're relating. And to me, that is, like, that's why my whole filter on life is, like, everything is relational. We exist as relational beings. We actually don't even have an eye unless we have, you know, contrast or information flowing from one point to the other point. Like, we literally don't exist. So to me, that is, like, there's such an opportunity here if we decide to take that on. And it, like you said, it also can bring up a lot of stuff. It can put us into, like, oh, what if there's conflict? What if our needs are different? Like, this is exactly why we need to be crossing over a little more there. I'm so glad that you have that perspective and you have that ability to hit all the tracks, to see a bigger picture. And why I'm so glad you're on this on Amory. Thank you so much for sharing your wisdom, your experience. I literally could keep asking you questions for hours, but I won't. I won't take all day. I do want to give you a chance, though, to share anything that maybe I didn't ask you about, anything that you feel really passionate about, and definitely where people can reach you, find out about Seltara, all of that.
Yeah, no, I just really want to say, like, thank you so much for sharing, you know, this knowledge and wisdom, and, like, really this perspective that you have about how everything is relational. I think that we've really, you know, we've really lost the village in a lot of our modern culture. And I feel like that is so at the root of, like, so much of the manifestations of physical, mental, existential illness that's really happening. And, you know, I think that there is, with intention and respect and care and, like, awareness, there is so much potential for this work and just, you know, really and even if it's not, like, plant medicine, it's, like, reconnecting with, like, your area of nature, the lands that you're on or the lands that you're from, and, you know, building this reciprocity, both, you know, with the land and with the people. And I think that, you know, I could also go on for a while, but I think that that is another real challenge with this movement of, you know, really understanding what it is to be in reciprocity and right relationship with the cultures and the people and the lands that this amazing healing comes from. And, you know, one thing that really came out of this conference too was an indigenous, it was a Native American healer from the lands of Denver. And she said, I'm so sorry if we're getting in the name of the tribe, but she said that, you know, you guys are focusing so much on this medicine of peyote, but what about the medicine of the soil? What about the medicine of the water? What about the medicine of the air? We're polluting all of these things. We're depleting the soils. Like, you can't just focus on, you know, this. And that for me really, really hit home. And so, you know, as much as I believe so strongly in this work, I think we also need to, like, not lose sight of the medicines that are already around us that are truly feeding us every single day. And so,
oh my God. Yes. I am just going to enter. We both live in Costa Rica and I feel like it's so present. I get to walk out and to the beach. And so every morning I connect with the elements, the water, the earth, the sun, and the air. And it is medicine for me. And it's so simple, so simple. And I'm in my 40s to have gotten to this point where it's like, oh, that's actually what we need. We need to make sure that all of this is clean and pure and that we are saving it. And I'll share, like, one little moment that I had. You and I went to Envision Festival, and our friend Donnie, who was Savage, was playing a set, and I'd taken some psilocybin and I was dancing, and I backed up. It was like, I was too close. I'm like, okay, I need to back up, back up, back up. And I found a spot way in the back with a little bit of patch of grass. And the insight that came up for me in that moment, as I've had my hands on the earth, it was so powerful and it was so simple. It was like, this is what we need. Where are you going? What are you trying to get to? This, the earth, the water, the air, the sun, like you have everything you need. And it's so simple. And I'm sure that has hit me before. And I didn't need that, you know, specific experience, but those, when they're strong and you're just like, I know it's no longer here in my head. It is in my body. Like that insight. And it's just such a simple message. So thank you for
Absolutely. Oh, I feel that so deeply. And I'm so grateful that the land here in Costa Rica, like, I really feel like it chose us. And I really, you know, we also have centers in Peru and the Amazon, and we're doing some retreats in the Sacred Valley as well. And, you know, just like something so, but you don't have to like go to these places to connect with the nature that mm-hmm. is all around you. And, you know, I've just really, I hope that, yeah, we can continue to learn from the land and be held by it in a good way and be in reciprocity with it. And but for anybody who does want to learn more about the work that we do and how we support people, definitely check us out, soltara.co, SOLTARA. And then for anyone, you don't even have to come through a Soltara retreat, but themaloca.com, MALOCA. Is our community and integration platform, but we, like I said, offer events every single month across like all the facets of holistic healing. That it's sort of like a way for me to be a little bit creative too, and try and figure out like new ways to support people and build community. And there's resources there as well. So, those are the two ways.
Fantastic. And I think you were very generous, and you created a discount code for anyone listening to this. To our episode. So you can just type in Amory, AMORY. You guys already know how to spell that. And I think it's $200 off of your experience if you end up booking with Soltara. So, and you know, if it's something that I'm just going to reflect a final thing on mine. I didn't have Soltara as my first experience. And now I can just know the difference of what it would have been like, because I didn't have the preparation. I didn't do the dieta. I didn't have anyone holding space for me. I was very distracted I was with Marty at the time, and he wasn't having a good experience. So I had all of my energy on him. And it was like, I don't feel like I actually got the experience. So I got an experience, but had I known what I know now, I would have waited. I would have known, okay, yes, this is going to, I have to allocate a big part of my budget for it. And it's so worth it to be held in that particular space rather than just like a shotgun approach. Like, oh, cool. We got ayahuasca. Let's do it. That doesn't feel good. I would invest into a good experience where the container is sacred as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thank you so much. And thank you for everything that you're doing, sharing these such important topics. And yeah, I mean, for sure, I agree with you. This is like spiritual surgery. You know, you really want a good surgeon.
Yes.
And the good and the right, you know, quote unquote hospital, like yes. container. Yeah.
Set and setting. Absolutely. Huge, huge.
Exactly. Exactly.
It is very, very big. Oh, Melissa, thank you so much. I love you. I'm so grateful for you. I am excited to continue our connection and this relationship and to see how you and Soltara and the work that you're doing in the world continues to evolve. It's just, it's an honor.
Thank you so much, Megan. Appreciate you having me on.
Welcome. Bye.